You see Calgary today?
What?
Covered in snow?
Oh, yeah. Well, you saw Edmonton last week, right?
That's
same.
So ridiculous.
Nah, man. Elliot Friedman, do you have a favorite hockey season? Is there one year that pops for you?
It's still to come.
Backing out, are you?
No. You know, here's the way I look at it, Jeff. I've been very lucky in my career. I've gotten to see incredible things. I've gotten to cover things I never thought I would ever get to cover. But there's one thing in my career that I haven't been able to cover that I would still like to. And that is being part of the broadcast when a Canadian team wins the Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. And I don't care which Canadian team it is. As we all know, the last one to win was Montreal in 93. That was the year I left university. So I've never done it. I've never covered a Canadian team winning the Stanley Cup. That's on my short list of things I still want to do. So that will be my favorite season.
But up until now, they've all been the same?
No, some of them.
85 is same as 76, is same as 92.
Yeah, but there's, okay, you know, what are the ones you enjoy watching as a fan? And what are the ones you enjoy watching as a reporter? Because it's interesting. Like last year, Vegas in the Stanley Cup final, that was a hell of a lot of fun. My liver didn't like it, but the rest of me sure did. You know, I've told the story before. I grew up a Blackhawks fan, 2010, when they finally won the first time after 50 years. That was a fun year. The first Stanley Cup I ever covered all the way, but was Buffalo-Dallas in 99. So I guess that would be a highlight for me too. But I'm the kind of guy, and I think this has really helped me, is that I can enjoy most things. Mm. Like there's things people will cover and they say, oh, this is awful. I hope it's over. I hope it's a sweep or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't think that way. So I enjoy most things. What about you?
87. I've talked about this a lot.
Yeah, but 80, you weren't 87 in the media
to me.
Then.
No, not in the media. I'm saying as a fan.
No, okay.
As,
but like, as I figured
to me, for media 2011, just being right in the middle of the riot in Vancouver, with me and Scott Morrison, you know.
You probably caused it.
Walking through, actually more Morrison than me. He's a wild man. Walking through, you know, tear gas and crystal meth fights and horses and cops and trying to get back to the hotel. But as a fan, 87 was the one. To me, that's always been the gold standard.
Now, does that include the Canada Cup at the
Absolutely.
Beginning of the year? Okay, well, I mean, that's fair.
87 was the season for me because it was a dark period of my life. My mom had passed away.
Yep.
I had sort of given up on the stream of making the OHL and it didn't work out for me. I was at a down spot for hockey, and it was almost as if, and this is going to sound just so ridiculous and overbearing, it's almost as if hockey said, hold on, come back. And we're going to give you an amazing year of hockey. We're going to give you the 87 Canada Cup, which is, until that point, the best hockey I ever saw in my life.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to give you the Easter Epic, which is the Washington Capitals and the New York Islanders.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic game. We're going to give you Rendezvous. That's going to be spectacular. And we're going to give you the Flyers and the Oilers 7-game thriller. Stanley Cup final. That to me, and again, this is just my liberal arts degree, that was hockey pulling me back. That's why that one has always stuck with me. 87 to me was the reason I'm probably still here. You know, here we are, the season's about to start. I always sort of look back and wait for some of the shine to lessen, and it never has. Hockey pulled me back. So I was ready to check out of all of it. I would check out of everything in life. But at that point, I was like, I'm done with hockey. And it pulled me back in.
It's a great story.
That was 87 for me. What do you expect this year in hockey, Elliot?
Well, this is always one of the most fun times of year for me. It's the beginning of hockey season. Like that first day is, you know, there's the two doubleheaders. There's a Canadian doubleheader and there's the U.S. doubleheader. There's the banner raising. I love the banner raising. One of the things I always look forward to, and we saw it on Monday night, was the rings being delivered to the team. And the Capitals got them on Monday night.
They keep getting bigger and bigger.
Well, I remember when the Penguins got their first one. So they won in 2009. Like I'm talking about the first one of this generation, not Mario. So they came to Toronto not long after they got the rings. And somebody told me that their rings were valued at each one at $28,000 U.S.
Mm-hmm.
This has just gotta dwarf that.
Yeah,
and the one thing I really like is that I think there's different caliber of rings, but everyone gets one. Like the employees get one.
Yeah.
You know, I like that.
Something for sure.
You get something. But those rings, they're beautiful. So between the revealing of the rings, the banner ceremony, the Canadian doubleheader. There's something about the first day of hockey season, the regular season, is one of my favorite days of the year.
Can I say something about the rings? Would I be a bad hockey person if I said I think they look tacky? The bigger they get, the tackier they look. Like, they're like griddles now. These things are huge.
I actually thought they're that enormous. The Capitals ones were not that tacky looking. No. I look at it this way now. To win is so hard. And if I was the Washington Capitals, after everything I've been through, I would make something so big I could wear it on my head.
Stanley Cup hat.
Stanley Cup ring hat, like a golden ring hat.
That's amazing.
You can wear it as like a neck collar or something like that. I just think that team and that organization,
yeah,
if they want to do something gaudy, enormous and gaudy, mm-hmm, they have earned the right to say, we can do it.
You know, it's the lesson from the Rocky movies. It's harder to stay on top than to get there. Penguins have done it. Last three cups have come from the Metro. Penguins went back to back. Can the Caps go back to back?
Why not?
Because it's hard.
Well,
it's hard.
It is hard. But when you look at their roster, like, they're good enough to do it. To me, the biggest question is, are they satisfied?
I don't know.
The Penguins weren't satisfied.
And still aren't. And that's led by Crosby.
Yeah. And I think Malkin's got some of that, too. Like, I'll tell you something. Yeah. So last weekend I was in Washington. The second week of the season, I think, is Toronto-Washington. So we're doing a big piece on Ovechkin. And one of the things I said to him in the interview was, nobody can question you anymore. No more losing, no more Penguins. And he stopped me and he looked at me and goes, you tell me, what's the next question?
Can you do it again?
That's what I said. I said, can you repeat?
Yeah.
But I love that answer from him. I loved it. It's like he was saying, oh, no, I know there's going to be more. Mm-hmm. It's not over. And Braden
Holt, hang on, is he talking about Stanley Cup? Is he talking about Olympic gold?
Anything. It was his way of saying, and again, he thinks in Russian, not English, so I'm extrapolating a bit. But he's saying, I know there's going to be something. You guys aren't done with me yet. And you know what Holtby said?
Hang on. Could that be Gretzky's record?
No, I think you're
thinking. He's talking team.
He's talking, you guys are going to find something to pick apart on me.
Oh, okay. I'm misinterpreting that. Okay, you guys are going to find something to chisel me down with.
Yes.
Okay,
will find something.
So for Crosby, it's painting. It's art by addition. But for Ovechkin, it's art by subtraction. It's sculpture. Chisel me down.
You guys are going to find something. And, you know, Holtby said something really interesting. He said that, as far as I can tell, they're criticizing Tom Brady right now.
On what grounds?
Well, if you're an NFL fan, and they, you know,
they
killed the Dolphins, so it's better. But, you know, he said the first 2 weeks that they hadn't been playing very well, and Brady was hearing criticism.
It's like Wings fans actually tearing down Ken Holland. I'm sorry.
Yes. I liked that, though, out of them. It was, to me, that was a little bit defiant from both of them. And Ovechkin and Holtby are very much the cornerstones of that team with Backstrom. But, you know, Holtby is a bit of a defiant guy, and Ovi's a bit of a defiant guy, and I like that out of them. I like the fact that they said, oh, no, we know this isn't over. That says to me that they are still hungry. And I do think Washington's capable. I do.
Who else is still hungry out there?
So I was on the Nashville podcast last week with Tom Willis and Brooks Bratton. You know, they asked me about Nashville, and, you know, we talked about this a little bit last week, like, how many teams are good enough to win the Stanley Cup? Like, when you sit down at the beginning of the year, so I counted 9. I would say, I think right now I could pick to win the Stanley Cup. San Jose.
I'm not there on San Jose.
You're not, eh?
I'm not there on San Jose.
I count like the 8.
Blue line, but
I count
I'm
eight.
Not Stanley Cup with San Jose.
San Jose. I have an 8B, and that's Vegas. I think they get shafted a bit, because nobody believes that last year was for real. But I think they're better than most people give them credit for. Winnipeg?
Yep, with you.
Nashville?
With you.
Toronto?
Getting closer. I'm still not there.
Tampa?
Yes.
Boston?
No.
Pittsburgh and Washington?
Pittsburgh and Washington, yes.
So you have two less teams on there that I have. You don't have Boston.
You don't have San Jose. No.
I think San Jose could win the Cup.
I don't have Maple Leafs either.
I think they could win it.
If everything breaks away. I mean, this is
But that's this whole league now.
But that's the unspoken story of all of this. Like, luck.
Yeah. Well, Mark Messier, I remember Mark Messier was in studio a couple of years ago, and he said, in the salary cap world, everybody has a weakness. Who can best overcome their weaknesses?
Who can?
I think all those teams are capable of overcoming their weaknesses. That's how I grade it.
Before we kick off the podcast, Blake Wheeler, by the way, the Winnipeg Jets, will be joining us here in a couple of moments. Meantime, you have a couple of thoughts on the all-exciting waiver wire today. You mentioned the Washington Capitals. They pick up Dmitri Yaskin. Buffalo Sabres pick up Remy Elie from Dallas, but the big two netminders go. Philadelphia Flyers claim Calvin Pickard. Carolina Hurricanes pick off Curtis McElhinney.
I would guess that Toronto didn't think they were going to lose both of them. I figured that they thought that they were going to lose one, and I thought McElhinney was going to be the guy. I really believe someone was going to claim him. He played really well for Toronto in not easy games. You know, Toronto makes it very clear, if you're the backup goalie, you're getting all the terrible games. You're getting the back end of the back-to-back where the other team is sitting there and waiting for you. And Curtis McElhinney did a great job, including putting them in the playoffs 2 years ago against Pittsburgh when Anderson
got
hurt during the game.
Oh, the save off the knob of his stick.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, everyone forgets that. They had to beat either Pittsburgh or Columbus, 200-point teams, and he came off the bench for an injured Anderson and he won that game.
Centering pass, Crosby, great save, McElhinney! That might be the save of the season for backup Curtis McElhinney on Sidney Crosby. Wow.
And I thought for sure he was going to get claimed. And then when Darling got hurt the other day, I was like, he's going there because he's not making a ton of money and they're going to have a high waiver priority. I bet you they didn't see Pickard coming. I would bet they thought that Pickard was going to be the goalie this year in the American Hockey League.
Even though Philadelphia has some dings there, Carter Hart sent down to the AHL. See, I thought Winnipeg might have been looking for a backup netminder as well.
Yeah, and he's from out there. And Philadelphia would have had a better waiver priority than Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, the interesting thing about Brassois is he trained with Hellebuck all summer. So I wondered if they thought they had some chemistry there. I don't know. It's a good question. You know, when Hextall said the other day, when they asked him about Carter Hart going down to the minors, he said something along the lines of, you know, I like for guys to stay down there, but circumstances may be different this year.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I should have seen this coming. But I would think that Toronto didn't think both of those guys were getting claimed.
They go out there and try to get a goaltender now for the Marlies?
Well, you know, what else are you going to do?
Where are you going to find them?
I mean, you can say we're going to go internal and let our even younger kids have a chance to play. They do have other goaltenders in their system. Or you go out and you find something. It's interesting because of the choices they made with their roster, they had the best defense in the American Hockey League last year.
Yeah.
It's going to be thinner than that now because of the guys who are staying up.
Led by Martin Marinson.
Yeah.
All your analytics guys, and he's up.
Yeah. And I think it's going to be really interesting because they really value their American Hockey League team. I'm curious to see what they do with it. Or they just say, you know what? We're going to give a chance to the guys who are here.
All right. For 3 weeks now, before I get to the start of the podcast, every time I've seen you, you've been carrying the same book, Gridiron Genius, and you have it in front of you right now. Are you actually reading it?
You know, the
or is it prop book?
Like, no,
the books you have, you leave around the house.
Yes.
Just to let people think that you're reading it. Mine is Infinite Jest.
I'm going
to
name.
David Foster
I'm
Wallace.
Name drop Jeff,
is this yours?
I'm going to name drop Jeff Blair here because Jeff Blair told me a story when he was covering the Jays. Remember the Jays had Miguel Batista and he had Gandhi book. Well, Jeff was convinced that it had never been beyond page three and it was just there to make people think that he read the Gandhi book. No, I've read this. I'm almost done. You know what? I am really trying to spend less time on social media this year and, you know, read more. It's just, as you know, it's hard. So I'm almost done, and I'm looking forward to my next book, which is called Bad Blood.
You mentioned this off air. This sounds like a fascinating one.
Well, there was a company called Theranos, and they were basically you prick yourself and you lean about your DNA and your health situation top to bottom. And it turned out the company was a billion-dollar valuation built on lies. And the reporter's name is John Carreyrou, and he wrote a book about investigating the company. I've heard great things about it, and it's next.
One of my favorite sports props stories was told to me by John Shannon.
Mm-hmm.
We were working a game, and Ryan Reeves was playing. This is when Reeves, I think, was with St. Louis. And he was talking about his dad, Willard Reeves, right? Legendary CFLer. He said Willard Reeves was famous for bringing a briefcase to practice and bringing a briefcase to games. I'm going to work. I'm a businessman. John told me inside the briefcase, comic books. Ryan Reeves' father, Willard Reeves. Let's begin the podcast. This is 31 Thoughts, brought to you by the all-new 2018 GMC Sierra Denali.
As he gets cleaned out by Wilson, Sundquist stays down, and a host of Blues are coming to talk to 43
Red. And Thorburner grab him right away. Here's the play. You'll see Sundquist move across, and down goes Sundquist. Here's Sundquist with the puck, and there's the follow-through of Wilson. Wilson back-checking on the right side, comes across, and Sundquist does not see him out of his right eye.
And referees Raymond and South assessing a five-minute major to the Capitals' power forward.
Not good news for Caps fans.
All right, Elliot, here we go, 31 Thoughts podcast. Again, first of all, thanks for all the compliments and comments we got last week about not only talking to Tyler Seguin, but also Dallas Green. I had more people text me and
yes.
call me and pull me aside about Dallas Green, like hockey people. I won't name them because I don't want to embarrass them. Angry, like local guys, that we didn't invite in to meet Dallas because they're huge fans. Enormous.
Well, that's because you're a selfish person.
I am. That's right. And so are you, Elliot, because you didn't spread
I didn't
around
invite
either.
Anyone either.
We didn't. But thanks again to Dallas Green last week and Tyler Seguin. Coming up this week, Blake Wheeler of the Winnipeg Jets. Looking forward to that conversation. In the meantime, by the time this podcast is released, we may already know what the number is. But Tom Wilson's probably going to get a big one for the hit on Oscar Sundquist.
It's interesting that Brian McClellan, the GM of the Capitals, has come right out and said one of the reasons they made the Dmitri Yaskin waiver claim from St. Louis is because they're preparing for this. And from what I understand, the pressure on the NHL to do something here is enormous. So, you know, Sunday afternoon, it's the last Sunday before, you know, hockey season starts. I'm with my family. We were watching football for a little bit, but then I was out. And then all of a sudden, the first text came, did you just see what just happened?
Yeah.
And then there were more and there were more, and then you started to figure out with Tom Wilson and Sundquist. And I understand that the phones just blew up in the NHL offices too. Like, did you guys see this? And I'm not surprised at all he was offered an in-person hearing. The fact is it's Wednesday morning in New York. And the Capitals play Wednesday night, obviously, with their banner raising, yep. And they like to get those things done. So, and the league tries to push back on that stuff.
This is from other teams to the
other teams, media, you name it. Mm-hmm. It comes from everywhere. And the league does push back on that stuff because they're sitting there saying, you know, if he does appeal this, we don't want the appearance of bias. But I was told just the amount of messages, calls, whatever, mm-hmm. they were off the charts. Like, people were demanding that something get done here.
We've talked about Tom Wilson a lot on this podcast. Anyone that runs any type of hockey media has had the Tom Wilson conversation. Last season, we sort of arrived at the point that, you know, Tom Wilson is unique because there's no one really like him in the NHL. And
that's true.
Once upon a time, each team had a couple of sluggers and a couple of heavy hitters. You know, now there's only a couple of guys, which makes it more and more pronounced. And, you know, we're growing up and I think the Connor McDavid group was the first one that grew up with this rules package just being hockey. Didn't have to break any habits, didn't have to relearn the game. This is just hockey. And they grow up and go through minor hockey where there isn't that volume of heavy hitting like that anymore. There's not headhunters really anymore, and they get weeded out by the time you get into, I mean, junior hockey has fighting rules, and they're weighing in on, you know, heavy suspensions, 10 games, 12 games, 20 games. Like, there are heavy suspensions in junior hockey now for headshots. So generally by the time you get to the NHL, these guys are weeded out. He's one of the last men standing.
Yes.
Maybe the last man standing of that type of body checker.
I agree with that 1,000%. You know, he's a good player. He's a reason they won the Stanley Cup last year.
He can skate.
Yeah, he's...
He can skate.
I had a retired player, a guy of our generation, Jeff, say that there's nothing wrong with that hit. And the point I said to him is, you know, when you played, there was nothing wrong with that hit. When Scott Stevens played, there was nothing wrong with that hit. But now it's different. And now there is something wrong with that hit.
I think you have to change that statement to that one. there was nothing wrong
there
with that.
That's what I say. There was nothing.
In this day and age. It took me a long time to get here, too.
There isn't the stomach for this anymore. Now with what we know about concussions, and even though the NHL is fighting the concussion lawsuit, don't tell me it hasn't changed the game. You know, the NFL settled its concussion lawsuit, yeah. But if you watch the National Football League, you can see every week how much the game has changed. If Clay Matthews has gotten all these penalties early in the year and people are fighting, is this really a penalty? It's the same thing that the NHL is going through. The bottom line is your consumers don't have the stomach for this anymore. Mm-hmm. Now, I think the biggest question, again, as you said, we're recording this before the hearing. Last spring in the Penguin series, he had two big hits. One was on Dumoulin, one was on Aston Reese. He didn't get suspended for the Dumoulin. He did get suspended for the Aston Reese. I know that one thing that happened was with the Aston Reese hit, they had video that showed he got the head, that the main point of the contact was the head.
And that ended up being a broken jaw.
The fact is you can have a broken jaw if you hit the shoulder first, but they had a shot, and they didn't have that for Dumoulin. They weren't as confident in the camera angles they had for Dumoulin. And from what I've seen with Sundqvist, it's hard to tell. And to me, the question is, do they have a shot that says he clearly got Sundqvist's head? Because the second part of the question is this avoidable? And absolutely it's avoidable. If they have a shot that says to them that they clearly got Sundqvist's head, he's getting a big number. He's getting a very big number.
I wonder what constitutes a big number at this, because, you know, there's
Torres got 25, right?
Yeah, there's some you're never going to satisfy. Like, there are some people, like, you could throw 25 at them and they'll still say not enough. That if you want to erratic, get rid of this, you know, get this out of the game, get these types of hits from this specific player. But everyone has a different number.
Everything is precedence, right?
You're thinking Torres Hosa.
Well, I do, because if the league wanted to do that, and I don't know that they do want to do that. I'm just saying if they wanted to do that, they could point and say, here's Torres, and that's what he got.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way this all goes, right? Because it always gets lawyered up. Mm-hmm. Can we justify this on appeal? And if Wilson doesn't like George Parros' suspension, he can go to the commissioner, and if he doesn't like what the commissioner says, he can go to the arbitrator. The risk is always that the commissioner or the arbitrator could give him more. But because there's something in the book that says, you know, a guy with a history like Torres got this, I think the league could argue that he could get that if it wanted to.
Okay, so either way, Tom Wilson will watch the banner-raising ceremony, not from the ice, but from the stands, not wearing a jersey, but wearing a suit. Really nice piece, by the way. No 31 thoughts at sportsnet.ca this week, but a really nice piece on how John Tavares got to Toronto. This was a fascinating one that you wrote, Elliot. For those that haven't had a chance to have a peek at it yet, I want to get into some of the specifics of it in a second, but give us the wide brush how John got from the Islanders to the Maple Leafs.
You know, I think the thing that really happened was, the first thing I want to say is that John Tavares is blessed with very loyal friends. And it's obvious he's a very good friend, and they are very good friends to him. There's a lot of anonymous friends of his who spoke to me, and I think the reason that they spoke to me was because they feel that he has been portrayed unfairly. So that is one of the reasons I think they were willing to talk. I think the big thing is most of his friends thought he was going to be a New York Islander for life.
Mm-hmm.
And as one person says early in the piece, it was the perfect storm of bad things to happen. We had a bad year. We didn't make any moves at the deadline. And all of a sudden, he went home and he started watching the playoffs. And he's thinking another year without it. And then the Maple Leafs got their hooks into him. And that's what a lot of his buddies think. Pat Brisson in the piece says he thought it was 70-30 before the week of the free agency that he was going back to New York. And I had multiple people tell me that Lou Lamoriello almost pulled it off. But I think at the end of the day, it was Nylander, Matthews, Marner, Tavares.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the whole reason that this whole thing has happened in Toronto to some degree is that They promised Tavares that all these guys would be together.
And that's why we're starting to see the pause with William Nylander?
Yes. And, you know, people have said, did Dubas make a mistake coming on the podcast and making the proclamation he did? Can you keep all four of them, Tavares, Nylander, Marner, and Matthews? Does the salary structure allow you to do that?
We can and we will.
I say, one, no, because we want guests to come on the podcast and be honest.
Yeah.
But I say, two, I realize now he was backing his promise to John Tavares.
I read the Dubas quote here on this podcast and inform it by the reality that is, I know that Austin Matthews reached out and was part of the come to Toronto pitch.
Yep.
And we know that Mitch Marner, you talk about this in your piece, David Amber talked to Mitch Marner about this. We aired it on the on our preview show 2 days ago.
I got called from Kyle and Babs and kind of got told that, you know, if you want me to go on the ice for a quick little thing, and set it for an accusation for the off season, and obviously you kind of get a feeling of who you know it's going to be for, and kind of just did some things on the ice, nothing too crazy, and the video I saw, it was pretty cool, it was really well done, and you know, I think it was a really hard thing for him to turn down seeing it.
What was the video?
It was just, I mean, just showing the past history of Toronto, the fans, seeing all that kind of stuff is, you know, just kind of putting him in that atmosphere of feeling like he's a Toronto Maple Leaf before he was, and you know, I think it kind of, you know, I think as a player playing here, I got shivers watching it. So it was awesome.
You know, he was part of the bring John Tavares to Toronto. So he was very much on board.
Yeah.
Was William Nylander part of that group that reached out to get John in the mix? I ask because I don't know.
I think that he probably sent a note, but I don't think he was like one of the primary guys. The other guy, I think, was Marlo. I do think Marlo played a very big part in it because he's a guy who's a quiet guy and B came from a quieter market to Toronto. I do think Marlo played a pretty significant role in it. I'll tell you the most interesting thing, Jeff, about the reporting the whole story was, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I texted one particular player and I said, I'm working on something. Can I talk to you about it? And he texted me back right away and said, call me at this time. By the way, John told me you were going to call. And I said, okay. And then the next day I spoke to another person who I know knows Tavares well. And we did our conversation. And then when it was over, I said to him, just out of morbid curiosity, did Tavares tell you that I was going to call? And he said, actually, he called me 2 weeks ago and said he couldn't believe you hadn't called me yet. So Tavares, one of the things people say about him is that he's really on the ball. And I found that very interesting. He was well aware of everything I was up to.
A couple things that I took away from your piece. One, to your point, he's on the ball. He's a smart guy. But the other thing that I took away is he is deliberate, at times slow, because he wants to be thorough when he makes a decision and he won't be rushed.
Yes. And the only reason he had to rush was because that free agency week is fast. Like, you have to make your decision quickly. It's pretty clear, you know, if you go back to that week, so the draft was on the Friday night in Dallas. He was in Oregon at the time on his stag. He got married at the beginning of August. And then he went from Oregon to LA for the meetings, and then he went back home to Toronto where he made his decision. And everything else he does is slow, as you mentioned, deliberate, methodical. Those are the words to describe him in the piece. And the fact that he had to do it that quickly, it really tore into him. You know, he wasn't sleeping as well as he normally does. As one friend said, you know, you're not supposed to sleep on your stag, and he slept even less than normal. And they said he was missing workouts, which he never does. And one of them said that he didn't think going to Toronto was as difficult a choice as leaving the Islanders. Like, he said that was what the most gut-wrenching thing was actually deciding that he was going to leave the team.
You know, this is twice in a row now where John Tavares has, you know, one of the best value contracts in the NHL.
Yes.
He left significant money on the table when you consider, you know, what he's worth, what the Islanders were offering, what the San Jose Sharks were offering. He was already on, you know, with all due respect to Duncan Keith, the best value contract in the NHL, and he's done it again. You wonder if, and we're always fixated on, you know, which player made the most in the NHL, Jagr, Pronger, like how, these
Vinny
guys.
Callier.
Vinny, pay two buyouts to do it and get contracts right away. Like, fascinated on who made the most money. I'm always fascinated with, and there's no real way to tell, who left the most money on the table. You could make the argument that Wayne Gretzky left the most money on the table, perhaps, in his hockey career. But in this generation, in this era, I don't know any hockey player that's left more money on the table than John Tavares. And here it is again with Toronto.
And some players, they leave money on the table and they know they're going to make money off the table, right?
Yeah.
If they want to. I don't even think he cares about that. I would just love to know, and I didn't really ask Brisson about it because it wasn't my concern for the story, but I would love to know what the marketing opportunities have been since he signed. Like, I can only imagine how companies are throwing themselves at him.
I don't really know.
I don't even think he cares.
Yeah. I never got the sense that he wanted to be, you know, a pitch man for Company X.
No.
I don't get that feeling at all.
I admire his determination to his craft. And that was one of the things, too, is that struck me is one of the Islanders did tell me that he's never seen a player have as much power in an organization as John Tavares did last year with New York. Like, they would have done anything he told them. And another Islander said to me he actually thought that that was part of the problem, that, you know, he doesn't want to be burdened with these other questions. He just wants to worry about hockey.
Great part in the piece where you talk about players text him, hey, John, get us out of practice. Hey, John, can you do something about this?
And he was so serious about it. Like, he's like, I'm not going to blow this. Like, it was.
I remember the first time ever seeing John Tavares. He used to play a pickup game with a bunch of buddies at Don Mills Arena. I want to say it was Thursday nights. And whenever the Marlboros were playing Don Mills Flyers, we would always make sure to get there because that was the minor midget AAA game was on before us every week. Whenever Toronto was, the Marlies were playing, we'd make sure to get there early. And he played on maybe the best minor midget hockey team I ever saw was John Tavares, who was an underager. Sam Gagne was on that team. Justin Vive, Akeem Alou, Brendan Smith.
I think all those guys are still friends.
Well, there's the Oakville Mafia guys, like John Tavares and Sam Gagne and Stefan Legion and Steve Mason, like that Oakville crew.
Yes.
All those Marlies guys still tight, too?
I think they are. Like, some of them, it was funny. Like, I went deep, deep, deep down the list. Like, I know you're a big Hockey DB guy. Like, I was going through deep.
Yeah,
and, like, it was interesting. Like, some guys were like, no, I'm not talking. Again, I really believe that the people who did talk to me, they were bothered by two things. He was like a traitor.
Mm-hmm.
He took the easy way out. And the third thing was that he had made his decision before last year. Like, they swore that.
It wasn't until that week?
No, they admit that after the trade deadline, they said there had to be moments where he thought about it. But where they really said it changed was after the season when he started watching the playoffs and saying, I'm not doing this again.
It's a great piece, Elliot.
Thanks,
check it
buddy.
Out at sportsnet.ca. We're going to come back and talk to Blake Wheeler, the Winnipeg Jets, next. The GMC Sierra Denali sets a higher standard in a full-size pickup for purposeful technology and performance. Features like Apple CarPlay keeps you connected to what matters most, and an available 420 horsepower 6.2-liter engine gives you the power to take on any challenge. Lead the way like a pro with the GMC Sierra Denali. GMC, we are professional grade. Elliot, our very special guest, Blake Wheeler from the Winnipeg Jets. Blake, first of all, thanks for doing this. Second of all, expectations are high in the city of Winnipeg. On the outside looking in, everyone's looking at your team and saying they once again have a legitimate shot at the Stanley Cup. What's the feeling in the room?
Oh, I think we're just excited to get going. You know, that's so far away. I think if we learned anything from last year, the talk before the season, expectations and, you know, the power rankings and all that stuff, it doesn't matter this time of year. We were on nobody's radar last year, you know, and then by the end of the year, we had a shot at it. So there's a lot that goes into it. After two games last year, you know, we were pretty much written off by everyone, and we can learn from some of those experiences. So I think we can try to apply some of the things we learned last year, what made us good, try to build off of that, and we'll see where that takes us.
Blake, I've become a guy who reads a lot about Nick Saban, and Nick Saban is the process. I'm all about the process. I'm listening to that answer you just gave us, and I'm thinking, are you a process guy?
Well, I think you have to you have to learn to love that. You know, you have to learn to love all 82 games. This is it's a marathon. Obviously, we know that, and you know, we have to come into the season every single day, every single game. As cliche as it sounds, but you know, we have to take those days and try to get better every single day. I think, you know, everyone wants to talk about last year. I think it's time to turn the page on last year. And certainly, like I said before, we can try to learn some of those lessons and apply them to what we're trying to do this year, try to make us a better hockey team. But that was last year. And, you know, if we don't dive back into the day-to-day grind and kind of absorb, you know, what each day brings to us, then it's going to slip away from us.
Your teammates, I'm interested in this line of questioning and answering. Your teammates have said there are two Blake Wheelers. There is the Blake Wheeler that we know as the reason we picked him as captain, because he's an easy guy to get along with. His heart's in the right place and he cares about the team. And there's also the other side of Blake Wheeler, which is the other reason we named him captain, because he gets angry when we don't do things the right way. He gets angry when practices aren't done properly, and he becomes grumpy Blake Wheeler when he doesn't like what he's seeing around the team in the rink. Can you talk about those two personalities?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a juggling act. You know, I think first and foremost, you know, you try to be, regardless of whether you're a captain or not, you know, I want to be a leader on the ice, not just a guy that's in the room directing traffic. So it's really important for me to bring a certain level of, you know, intensity to practice every day, to games every single day. And I hope that rubs off on guys, you know, in a positive way. I think that there are times when that can boil a little bit. I think as I've gotten older, I've gotten better about, you know, kind of controlling when and where and time and place and, you know, maybe who's involved in that. But I think all in all, it all comes from a good place. You know, I just genuinely have a high level that I expect for myself every single day. I have a high level I expect, you know, from our team every single day. And more than anything, I try to dish out positive reinforcement more than anything. And there's going to be days, you know, there's going to be days like anything else where, you know, we don't have it or I don't have it, and the intensity gets revved up a little bit. And I think that's a healthy thing.
So when someone new joins the team, either someone makes the squad at a training camp, there's a trade, a waiver acquisition. When someone new joins the Winnipeg Jets as the captain, what are they in store for?
Well, I think guys that are new to our team find that we have a pretty great group pretty quickly. You know, the guys that have come in that have been new, I think, you know, we welcome them, you know, with open arms. And I think we've had a lot of guys that have fit in really well with us. Like anything else, there's going to be, you know, instances where it just isn't a good fit. And I think that's true for any team, but more so than not, you know, our team is guys that get along really, really well, guys that are dedicated to being good hockey players and a good hockey team. And, you know, I think we have a group that really pushes each other. So I think any new guys have really enjoyed kind of joining our group, and the guys that we've gotten that have been newcomers who have made a big difference for us.
You know, that's the thing, Blake. I think that you guys have done the best is not only are you, the Jets, a legitimate top team in the NHL, but when the team came back, there were questions, would players want to stay? And now you've signed long-term. Dustin Byfuglien signed long-term. Connor Hellebuck signed long-term. Mark Scheifele signed long-term. Brian Little signed long-term. We're expecting at some time that Patrick Laine is going to sign long-term. You have, I think, shown a lot of skeptics that good players would want to stay in Winnipeg, that there is something there worth staying for.
Yeah, I think that starts from the top. You know, I think our ownership is as solid as it gets. You know, Mark Chipman is just such a great person, and he's around the guys, and I think the guys really respect him and the passion he brings for this city, as well as our team and each individual guy. You know, I think he invests in each individual guy, having a relationship with everyone. I think that goes a long way, and our management's the same way, and Paul Maurice is the same way. And then on top of it, like I said, we have a locker room full of good guys. I don't think anyone signs on long-term here, you know, expecting it to be the warmest place, the most luxurious place. But that with that being said, you know, there's a ton of great people in Winnipeg. There's a lot of real positives to being a part of this community that outweigh the cold weather in January.
Elliot, earlier on, Blake talked about the process, and you talked about it as well. I'm curious if there's one thing that's part of the process that you know you have to do, but you hate doing, and you do it anyway. Is there one thing for you like that?
Media.
Hate's a strong word, and I remember watching something about Nicholas Lindstrom a long time ago, and you know, I think the biggest compliment he got from his coaching staff at the time was the little things, the routine, I guess they called it. That's the thing that he was the best at. You know, he was doing the same things every single day, and it's monotonous. And I'm telling you, like I said, an 82 game season is a marathon. And there's days where it's no fun doing things in the gym or doing things to warm up or talking to the media, Elliot. but you know, seeing a guy like that who found a way to love doing that stuff every single day and make himself great at doing every single day, that stuck with me. So I've tried to trick myself on those days to making it fun and enjoying it and putting a smile on my face, even though, you know, inside you're burning up. But I think carrying a positive attitude through those things goes a long way.
How many goals for Line A this year?
It's hard to put a number on it. You know, there's spurts that he has where he can't miss, you know. So obviously he scored 40 goals last year, and everyone, you know, the natural thing is you want to see him score 50. He's more than capable of doing that. So I think that's a realistic number. But like anything else, you know, a lot of things play into that. But he looks fantastic to start the season.
Is Nick Ehlers as quick as Connor McDavid?
Oh, when Nicky's going, there are a few guys that move like him. I don't know if I've ever seen anyone move like Connor McDavid, but Nicky is right there. When he's flying around out there, there are a few guys that can move like him.
Our answer might be Mark Stone, but do you have a favorite Dustin Byfuglien hit?
There have been a few. I was on the ice for the Stone one.
Poke free by Stone. He is hammered by Byfuglien, and that is going to draw a crowd. Wow, did Byfuglien ever level Stone?
That one was probably the heaviest one. You know, that was one where kind of the whole building goes silent. Like, you just could hear it. You know, it sounds different.
That is the devastation that Big Byf can bring.
The couple he had in the playoffs last year when we were on the power play against Minnesota, I believe it was Eric Sinek and Koivu. I was on the ice for both of those, too.
And Koivu jams at it. Oh, he had another chance turning around, but he was on his knee. Oh, and then Koivu was absolutely blown up.
Paul Maurice offered this up, re-Byfuglien's hits. He says Byfuglien actually pulls up because if he followed through, the hits would be so ugly as to require a penalty. So there.
But he does that a lot. He does that, you know, I don't want to say every game, but he has somebody on the tracks quite often. And when he decides he's going to hit somebody, there's just nothing you can do. And in practice, I go at him hard just because it's, you know, I know he's not going to go too hard back at me, and he's just a brick wall. There's nobody like him.
Is there a team that you absolutely love playing, that when you see them on the schedule, you're like, I can't wait to play these guys tonight because it's your type of game?
I mean, when you say love, it, you know, I don't want to – there's no team that I circle on my calendar and say it's going to be an easy night. There's just no such thing in this league.
No, I wouldn't ask you that. You know, like, I'm asking, like, that just the way the game goes, like – this is my kind of game. I love the energy. I love the intensity. I know this is going to be a great game tonight against these guys, and I love to be part of it. I'd never ask you to embarrass a team like that because you'd punch me in the nose the next time you saw me.
No. I know you weren't asking that. I just wanted to preface it so that when I name a team, it didn't come off like I was saying that. But I really enjoy our games with Nashville. I think our teams are very similar. Their defensemen are really active. Their forwards are really skilled. And it's just a fast game back and forth, you know, and both buildings are rocking. There's typically a lot on the line when we're playing those guys. And obviously our series last year was pretty special. So we got a ton of respect for that team. And I think those games bring out the best in both of our clubs.
Is there one player that brings out the best in you that, you know, when you play that game, you know what, he's going to bring out the best in me?
I think playing against Nashville requires a lot, you know, out of out of my position, because I'm typically playing against like a Roman Yossi or even Ekholm, and it's back and forth. You know, like if I'm lazy on a back check, I'm going to get beat up the ice. There's just no opportunity to take a break on the ice. So that defensive core as a whole, they kind of force you to bring your A game. You know, like I said, if you're napping on the way back, it's probably going to end up in your net. So those are fun guys to play against.
One of the top teams in the NHL. Best of luck this year, Blake, both personally and, of course, with the Winnipeg Jets. Thanks for doing this today.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hockey season is back with Tim Hortons NHL trading cards. Just $1 with the purchase of any beverage. Plus, play online at collecttowin.ca for a chance to meet Sidney Crosby. Plus taxes at participating Tim Hortons restaurants for a limited time.
You know what? Did you see that Chris Davis thing for Oakland? For the fourth straight year, he hit .247.
Are you serious?
And they took him out of the game on Sunday to keep it at .247.
There you go. That's Blake Wheeler of the Winnipeg Jets. Your thoughts on Blake Wheeler, the player, Elliot, before I ask you about Winnipeg Jets, the team.
Just a guy who's really come a long way. I think that, you know, I'm a constant believer in that you can reinvent yourself if you wish. I think if you went back 10 years and looked at what the reputation was of Blake Wheeler as a player, mm-hmm. it wasn't anywhere near where
Not
it is now.
Not
but that
chance.
Doesn't mean that you give up on him or you think it can't happen. This is a guy who, as he's gotten older, has discovered more things, has obviously learned a lot about himself. Obviously, from that interview, the thing I liked the most was he's got a high standard for himself. He's not going to demand anything of teammates that he isn't going to demand of himself.
Mm-hmm.
And because he demands it of himself, he can demand it from the teammates. Who did he get it from? Maybe the second best defenseman of all time,
yeah.
Nicklas Lidström. So I look at that as, if I was listening to that and I didn't know Blake Wheeler, I would say, boy, like wherever I am in my life now, I can be different because that guy did it. Yeah. So why can't I?
All right, we'll finish
up. He blew
up.
Off your Stanley Cup prediction, eh? Like, he was
yeah.
I'm not having any of that.
Not touching any of that.
Jeff,
stuff.
Like, if we get guests on, can you try and ask them better questions? Like, seriously, what
you
was
You know
that?
What? You know what they say? A mediocre man is always at his best. That's my that's my saying for myself, Philly. You know this. We've known each other long enough. Okay, finish up with some hashtag Ask31s. Apologies for not getting to this
can
so
I
far.
Ask you an Ask31?
Yeah, shoot.
There's no way you really like working out.
No way that I really like working out?
Yeah.
I do. The older I get,
no,
the
don't.
More I like it. Why?
Well, you're in good shape, and you've been in good shape. I'll tell you, like, John McFarland, who I interviewed for
yeah.
31 Thoughts a couple weeks ago at Jeff's suggestion,
yeah.
I mentioned that he worked out in the same gym as Jeff, and he goes, oh, yeah, Jeff's in really good shape. So I'm trying to get in better shape now. I'm going working out this morning.
What are you doing?
Just, you know, I joined a gym right
yeah.
near our house and just doing some exercise and eating better and stuff like that. And I'm doing this on Tuesday morning when we tape this, before we tape this, and I'm like, there is no way anybody enjoys this. There is no way that Jeff Merrick enjoys this.
I do honestly
no,
enjoy it.
No, you don't.
I do. Honestly,
you are lying.
No, I enjoy it. I mean, there are, listen, it's
nobody
hard.
Likes working out.
I do.
Nobody.
I get that rush. Like, you know what I really love? And my trainer's always, you know what, you're undoing everything you're doing here in the gym. I love distance running. See, I love lifting and I love distance running. And
I don't mind lifting.
They don't go together.
I hate running.
I love running.
And
I
my trainer, she's Jenny. She's a great trainer, but she's a sadist man. She just kills
yeah.
me.
Yeah. So what are you horrible at?
Like
what's the one thing that you can't stand? Like, oh man, here we go. I'm doing deads again. This is terrible. Oh, my bench press is awful. Like, what is it?
Push-ups. I'm a big push-up guy.
Yeah.
I will tell you the thing that I am most proudest of in my athletic life.
Yeah.
Was back when I hosted the CFL on CBC,
Woo.
Not the NBA, but the CFL on CBC, the offensive lineman from the Calgary Stampeders 1 year bet I couldn't do 50 push-ups.
And did you?
And I was in better shape than I am now at that time. So we went into their weight room, and one guy bet me $50 I couldn't do 50 push-ups. And in front of all of them, I did it.
Attaboy.
And he's like, oh, I guess I got to pay $50 now. And I go, no, I don't want the money. I just wanted to do it.
How was your form by the end?
They said it was acceptable. Like, I wasn't like I was just going up and down with my butt. Like, they said it was acceptable form, which is why they gave me credit for it. But now I can't do 15.
Are you serious?
Like, I can do 15 and then I stop. But I used to be able to do 50 in a row.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been way too fat most of the last 30 years, but that was a time when I could do it. Push-ups now, it bothers me that I could do that
That's your standard is push-ups?
Yes.
That's the one like I need to do.
It's tough.
Yeah.
And also I injured my shoulder a few years ago, so it's harder for me now.
Mm-hmm.
But it bothers me that I could do that back then,
yeah,
and I can't do 50 now.
You see,
like after 15, when I'm not starting out now, I'm getting exhausted. It bugs me.
Every year at the gym, there's a guy who just finished up a Canisius.
By the way, there are witnesses to this Calgary Stampede story if you don't believe it.
There's one hockey player, finished up a Canisius, is at Cincinnati ECHL right now. Shout out Jeff Murray. Every year we make one bet. He's a hockey player who follows it closely.
Okay.
Jeff Murray. And so every year we make a bet on a free agent and how much he's going to get. 2 years ago was Nick Bonino, and he nailed it. Nailed the contract. So it was a push-up bet. And so I had to eat that one. But he's a complete stickler on form, too. So he had, like, you know, the fist underneath me right for the chest. Like, all they got to be, like, perfect form. So I get that every year. Are you prepared to do a push-up challenge
against
this year?
You?
Yeah.
So what's the challenge?
I don't know. You pick a number and pick yours, and I'll pick mine.
No. We have to do the same number.
You want the same number?
We have to. What's the point of you saying, oh, I'm going to do 100 and I'm going to do 50? Like, that's a joke. No, because I got to get to your level.
Son, you know.
So how many push-ups can you do?
I have no idea. You know what? I'll be at the gym first thing tomorrow morning. And the first thing that I'll do after warm-up is I'll see how many I can bang out. Oh, you know who joined our gym, by the way, that I saw yesterday?
Who?
Had a nice conversation with. Welcome to Stouffville. Mikhail Grabowski.
Nice.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was living up there.
Yeah.
I figured he might have gone home. Okay.
No, just moved up there. Grabowski's in there.
Okay.
So I will.
I bet you're in better shape than he is, too.
He's still in good shape. He's in really good shape, man. And flexible.
So, okay. So, like, I'm not trying to beat you because I can't. Like, you've got a lot of head start and you're in better shape. And you're much more committed than I am.
I've seen you get focused on things.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I hate work. You like it. I can't stand it. So, okay, next week,
you're
going to come here
is.
And you're going to give me a challenge to hit and a date.
All right.
All right?
We can do that.
All right.
All right. We'll do that.
Yeah,
and
I know. Oh, by the way, in case you show this on YouTube today, I just want to give a mention.
Yeah, show
today,
the hat.
We're doing this on October the 2nd. We're taping this, and it's the Ernie Els Autism Golf Tournament in Toronto area today, so I'm wearing the hat. That's
beautiful hat.
Do. Yeah.
Nice.
All right. Give me some Ask 31s.
All right. Well, you kicked it off, and we're going to do a couple of here. This is from Cheap Toronto Fan. Which goalie equipment design is your all-time favorite? Mine was Trevor Kidd with the Leafs. Hashtag Ask 31.
I love Fleury's yellow pads.
Fleury's yellow pads are great.
Fleury's yellow pads, the ones I liked. And Cheap Toronto Fan, I hope that this starts to creep even more back into the NHL now.
Yes, I agree.
It's time.
I have a wonderful story, a funny story about Trevor Kidd's old pads.
Okay.
This is when Trevor Kidd had just finished up with Toronto, and I was playing on a roller hockey team with Wade Bielak, the late Wade Bielak. Just such a wonderful guy. I'm sure he had plenty of interactions with Wade. Great guy. And so we needed a goalie 1 week, and Wade's like, I'm playing net. And I'm like, Wade, you're really going in net? He's like, I'm going in net. I go, do you have pads? Nope. I'll get pads. Don't worry. So it's Saturday morning game. It's a tournament. I think it was a tournament. And so we're waiting. It's like 9 o'clock. No Wade. Jeez, where's Wade? And he shows up just before we're about to go on, and he's got Trevor Kidd's gear. And I'm like, looking at it, I'm like, oh my God, he's got Trevor Kidd's. I'm like, wait, is that Trevor Kidd's? He goes, oh yeah. Had to get to their Canada Center this morning, break in, get into the room, and grab all of Trevor's gear. I'm like, well, what's he going to do? He's like, he doesn't need this. He's not coming back. He's not coming back to Toronto. I'm using it for roller hockey. So everyone
That's
thought it was,
awesome.
And it's Wade Bielak dressed up as Trevor Kidd. I wish I would have taken pictures because he was a great guy, but an awful roller hockey goalie. Wonderful guy, though.
I would not hold that against him. That's
wonderful
for sure.
Wonderful dude. Okay. From Mr. Pastry. We get the most interesting tweeters.
That's good for working out.
What do you and Elliot think will be the big issues facing the next CBA? Tax inequity, front-loaded bonuses, etc. Thanks, love the podcast.
Well, I mean, the ones we know that are, you know, escrow Olympics.
Yeah.
But I think if there's going to be a fight about something that we haven't really considered yet, it's the definition of hockey-related revenue.
Do you think you'll ever get to the point where franchise sale becomes part of that?
No.
Ever?
No. Like, there's some, like, ground zero, drop-dead arguments. Guaranteed contracts. If I was a player, I would fight that forever. I would ruin your franchise, your league, if you try to take that away from me. And I would say the same thing for an owner. Like,
yeah.
I would say you're a player compensation. I'll pay you whatever you earn, but this is my money in the team, and I'm getting that.
So if you're the owner, then you say, okay, you want some of that, then next time there's a cash call, you're up for it as well.
Absolutely.
From Samuel Fleming, how is the How is the Calgary arena situation entering this year? Seem pretty quiet on that front over the summer.
I think that that's by design. I think obviously the talks there have gone really badly. My guess is they're probably waiting to see what happens with the Olympic stuff before they make any further pronouncements.
This might be one that you might want to spend a little more time thinking about, but here goes.
Okay.
From Will, is there an under-the-radar storyline that could affect the league on a larger level? Assuming it means this season.
You know, I'll tell you something. I heard last week that there was some potential concussion announcement coming. Mm-hmm. And I was told specifically when I researched it, it's not a settlement. I think the league is still fighting that battle in the courts. But I was told that there might be some talk about, I don't know if fund is the right word, mm-hmm. or discussion about how to help players in the future, maybe getting people who really needed care. And I was told it wasn't true. And then I had another source saying, I can't say yes or no. And I think the issue is, Jeff, I mm-hmm. don't have the language right. But I was specifically told it's not a settlement. But it sounds to me like there's a possibility the league is thinking about, how do we handle this? Is there another way to handle this potentially? And I heard it was being discussed among some of the players who were considering suing the league. Like, we know they're in mediation. Have there potentially been talks about, without discussing the lawsuit, here's another way to have help? I don't know what the answer is. And I think I'm around the story, but I don't have the story.
Right.
That might be my answer.
That's a great answer. Want to thank a couple of people. Emil Delich, our producer. I want to thank Blake Wheeler for popping by today. I want to end on, you mentioned earlier on about I'm doing less social media, trying to get off it, and I'm trying to read.
Mm-hmm.
And so as you said that, I went and scrambled and tried to find this wonderful quote from Tom Waits. I'm a big Tom Waits fan. I think he's not just a great musician, but a really thoughtful person as well. And this sort of winks at what you were talking about getting off social media, reading more.
As I look at my phone,
as you look at your phone
that.
While I'm talking, just completely blanking me, but that's okay.
I was listening.
And you just dog face me and read your iPhone. This is a quote from Tom Waits. We live in an age when you say casually to somebody, what's the story on that? And they run to the computer and tell you within 5 seconds. That's fine. But sometimes I just as soon continue wondering. We have a deficit of wonder right now. I think it's just a wonderful point by Tom Waits.
That's awesome.
We look for the answer so fast and we get it so fast, and the cost of that is wonder. Stay off your computer. Stay off your phone. Just wonder about things as we bid you adieu on this week's edition of 31 Thoughts, the podcast. This is, by the way, Jim Bryson. The song is called Cut Bait. He's got three more shows coming up. One in Ottawa, one in Kingston, one in Toronto at the legendary Dakota Tavern, Dundas and Ossington, an awesome place, on October the 18th. I just as soon continue wondering. We have a deficit of wonder right now. The words of Tom Waits. The last ones you will hear this week on 31 Thoughts.
And then the last year, I must have nursed a